All right, let me just introduce this with a few comments, then I'll read the text, and then we'll get into expounding it. We come now to a text that reflects something of a general weakness that is prevalent for all of fallen humanity in general. However, it is sad to admit that this is also a characteristic that is common in much of so-called Christian lifestyle. So it's a problem in the world, it's a problem in the life of the Christian. Let me give you an example from my own personal experience. I had a business before I became a Christian, and I was basically honest, and I don't say that, I mean, that was just more my inclination to be honest with people. And so I was basically honest in my dealings with other people. However, I quickly discovered that others I had to deal with could not really be trusted. This list included other businessmen, my own employees, some of my customers, and the list could go on and on and on. Basically, I discovered that I was living in a very crooked world. I should have known that before, but I really felt the sting of it in the business world, where it affected my, you know, my profit margin. Then I became a Christian and automatically assumed that at least all other Christians were truthful and trustworthy. And so if you were going to have some work done in your home, I mean, we made sure we called a Christian because this guy would give us a square deal, you know. And let me tell you that it came as a great shock to discover otherwise. Christians were about as dishonest as everybody else. I was stunned by that. I was shocked by that. It threw me for a loop, and I was really perplexed, and I was really disappointed. I thought there ought to be an incredible difference between the guy in the world and a professing Christian who's running a business. I thought they would be honest and straightforward and people of integrity. And I found almost as much as I found in the world that that just isn't how people ran businesses. It wasn't what they did. Now, it is this subject of personal integrity, generally manifested in our words spoken to others, that Jesus now addresses. And that's the issue he's going to tackle in these few verses tonight. Again, I think it's a critical area for modern Christians. So let's allow God to examine our hearts and to search and try our ways. Now here's the text in Matthew chapter 5, beginning at verse 33. Again, you have heard that it was said to those of old, you shall not swear falsely, but shall perform to the Lord what you have sworn. But I say to you, do not take an oath at all, either by heaven, for it is the throne of God, or by the earth, for it is his footstool, or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. And do not take an oath by your head, for you cannot make one hair white or black. Let what you say be simply yes or no. Anything more than this comes from evil. Amen. Now, those are the simple, straightforward words of Jesus. Again, they're not difficult to understand. They are more difficult to accept and even more difficult to practice. But they're certainly easy to understand. Now, let's begin with a reminder. We're going to be looking at honesty in speech. That's what he's talking about here. Or integrity in speech. And Jesus begins with the reminder in verse 33. He introduces his theme with the same teaching formula he had used previously in this section of the sermon. And his words are, you have heard that it was said to those of old. Now notice, he does not say it was written. So he's not going back to some Old Testament text and citing it. And he's saying something different here. He's saying, you have heard that it was said to those of old. In other words, Jesus was saying to his audience something like this. You know what has been the teaching of the rabbis. See, he's talking about the, you know, what is being said about the word rather than citing the word itself. You know what has been the teaching of the scribes and Pharisees. You know the way that the scriptures have been interpreted. You've heard these things. You are familiar with these things. That's basically what he's saying here. So he's talking to this multitude, primarily to his disciples who are gathered in front of him. Then there's a larger group of quasi-disciples, and then there's a multitude. And he is addressing that audience and telling them, basically, you guys know what has been said. You know what's kind of come down the pike over the years about this particular subject. You've heard that it was said to those of old. Now, what was it that they had heard? Well, basically, what they had heard was this. They had heard that one should not swear falsely to the Lord, but whatever one has vowed to God, they should perform in the proper manner. Okay, so that's what he's saying in verse 33 there. You've heard what has been said, you know, in the general teaching over the course of time, and this is what it can be reduced to. You shouldn't swear falsely. So if you're going to swear, make sure that it's by something true, and make sure that you perform the thing that you have sworn. He says, that's what you've heard. All right? Now, going on from there. The vow and the oath, also in verse 33. The words of Jesus, again, are not an Old Testament quotation, but they would serve as a good summary of Old Testament precepts. In other words, there's nothing wrong with what they've heard at this point. It's not something false. It's not something unbiblical. He's simply not citing a particular text to summarize it. He's simply summarizing it in terms of the vernacular. You've heard the general idea. But that idea does come out of Old Testament scripture. And I want to show you some of the places where that idea comes from. For example, Leviticus 19:12. You shall not swear by my name falsely, and so profane the name of your God. I am the Lord. So that's cast in the negative. You should not swear by my name in a false kind of way, which means if you're going to use my name, use it in the right kind of way. Swear truthfully, not falsely. Swear righteously. Otherwise, you will profane the name of the Lord. Otherwise, you're not only guilty of lying or breaking your vow, but you're guilty of breaking the third commandment. You're taking the name of the Lord in vain. And so everybody knew, don't swear falsely. And if you're going to invoke the divine name, boy, then make real sure you don't swear falsely. And then in Numbers 30 and verse 2, if a man vows a vow to the Lord or swears an oath to bind himself by a pledge, he shall not break his word. He shall do according to all that proceeds from his mouth. Now that's what Jesus was alluding to. You've heard it said that you should perform what you swear to. And that's what this is saying. If you're a person who's going to take an oath, you're going to pledge yourself, commit yourself to something or to some cause or to some person or whatever it may be, don't violate that. Don't break your word. Whatever you have said, make sure that that is actually what you do. Okay, now that was just part of, life and the theocracy of Israel. People understood that. I'm not saying everybody lived by it, but it was a principle that was well understood. Same thing in Deuteronomy 23, as Moses reiterates the law before they go into the land. If you make a vow to the Lord your God, you shall not delay fulfilling it. If you're going to do that, act upon it, because the Lord your God will surely require it of you, and you will be guilty of sin. In other words, the Lord is holding you accountable with respect to your word. You need to take it as seriously as God takes it, because God's going to require that of you. You're going to stand before Him at some point and give an account of that. And if you have not done it, you are guilty of sin. Okay? It's not just some kind of mistake. It's a sin. It's a sin before God. It brings guilt, whether you're conscious of the guilt or not, or know it or not, or feel it or not, it's still guilt in the court of heaven. You are culpable of wrong before God. And God's going to require that of you. You have to pay for that. And if that is not atoned for and repented of, you will pay for it at the judgment, and you will pay for it with your soul for eternity. It's a sin. It violates a holy God. And so he's simply saying here, don't delay to keep your word. If you say it, act on it. Do it quickly, decisively, and properly, because God is watching. And then my favorite one, Ecclesiastes 5, guard your steps when you go to the house of God. To draw near to listen is better than to offer the sacrifice of fools, for they do not know that they are doing evil. And now for our purposes, do not be rash with your mouth, nor let your heart be hasty to utter a word before God. For God is in heaven and you are on the earth. Therefore, let your words be few. For a dream comes with much business, and a fool's voice with many words. When you vow a vow to God, do not delay paying it, for He has no pleasure in fools. Pay what you vow. It is better that you should not vow than that you should vow and not pay. Let not your mouth lead you into sin. And do not say before the messenger that it was a mistake. Why should God be angry at your voice and destroy the work of your hands? For when dreams increase and words grow many, there is vanity, but God is the one you must fear. So you get the, you know, he reiterates it several times there in several different ways. Be a person of your word. If you make a vow, pay it. It's better not to vow than to vow and not pay it. You need to pay it because God is watching. God is listening. God wrote it in His book. And if you don't do it, that's going to stand out against you as guilt. And God has no pleasure in fools. So pay what you owe. Otherwise, God will be angry with you. And in the end, you're going to face God with respect to that particular sin. So basically, they're all saying the same thing here. The importance of being a person of integrity when it comes to your speech. Now, what conclusions can we draw if we put all of these scriptures together here? I've already alluded to some things, but several observations that are worthy of suggesting here. First of all, it certainly seems permissible to make a personal vow to the Lord. There's nothing wrong with a vow to God. You know, that's not a sinful thing to do. In fact, in the in former times and in many eras of church history, making vows to God was very common in religious practice because people were serious about God. They were serious about living before God. And they made vows. They pledged themselves to certain things. That's not in vogue so much anymore, but it certainly permissible. It's not wrong to make a vow to God. There's nothing forbidden in making a vow or taking an oath of some type. Some people have interpreted Jesus' words here wrongly and think it's wrong to take an oath. Like if you're going to go in court and you know, it used to be you put your hand in the Bible and you swear. No, can't do that because Jesus says don't swear. That misses the point. It's okay to make a vow. It's okay to take an oath. It's okay to swear to perform one's duty. If you watch people go into the military, they take a vow. They swear an oath to the Constitution, to the Commander-in-Chief, to be faithful, to discharge their duties. And that's necessary. We probably did that in the police force, right? I mean, yeah, we do that kind of thing. There's nothing wrong with saying, you know, under God, to the best of my ability, I swear that I am going to serve loyally to those that I'm committing myself to. You can count upon me. And I'm taking an oath to that effect. In our modern world, we make vows when we enter into marriage relationship, don't we? Those aren't just words that we say because that's the tradition, and that is a vow that is made. Then we take out a loan and agree to make monthly payments. You know, I got to sign that, I got to pay. You're making a vow there. I vow. You're giving me money. You're entrusting me with money. I'm a steward with what you're entrusting to me. I'm giving you my pledge. I'm giving you my word. I'm vowing. I will pay you back in the manner that you prescribe, in a timely fashion, with good conscience. And I will be faithful to do that. You can count upon me. That's a vow we make. I mean, the contract doesn't say, I so-and-so vow, to do such and such, but it doesn't have to say that. It's still a vow that we are making when we make commitments to God. Lord, I'm going to, go to church every single week unless providentially hindered. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. Those are things we are committing ourselves to God. And I committed myself to God for pastoral ministry. God called first. I answered the call, committed myself to it. And 35 plus years later, we're still doing it. You know, I could not, in good conscience, just quit that and say, I don't feel like doing that anymore. No, it's there's something that has gripped the heart, and until there's a release there, you know, you have to fulfill your vow. All right. So my first point is, coming out of these particular texts, it is permissible to make a vow to God. However, here's the main part of what we need to know. One should not make a vow too hastily without due consideration of the facts involved. The one who makes a vow should be a few words and willing to count the actual cost involved. In other words, you don't make it hastily. You don't make a rash vow. It doesn't come out of just a lot of words No, you have to think about what it is you're going to do. Think about what you're making a vow for. Bring it down to, reduce it down to the bottom line. So you know exactly what it is that is required. You know exactly what you need to do. And you know exactly what kind of vow you're making. And then you make it. It's well considered. It's not rash. And it's not, again, out of just a multitude of words and a lot of rhetoric, most of it being empty-headed and ill-spoken, but in that, your word has been given, and that is regarded as a vow. And so that's why Ecclesiastes says here, you better have your words real few, and just get down to the essential issues. And then finally, one should make certain that he keeps whatever vow he has made to God and others. So a vow, in other words, should not be based on emotional impulse. You know, my emotions are real high today, and I just love this gal so much, and I just know, I mean, it's got to be right the way I feel today. And I mean, I'm just, before my feelings change, I'm going to get a wedding ring, and I'm going to run down and put it on her finger, and maybe next Saturday we can get married, and, you know, do this thing real quick so the feelings won't subside. I could change my mind. You know, those feelings are going to subside. The vow better be based more than on just some, you know, hot flashes and, you know, hormonal urges and what have you. You know, it has to be a little more well considered than that. You're making a vow. And feelings are going to change. Feelings are going to fluctuate. It doesn't matter how you can wake up 3 days later and go, what have I done? My feelings aren't the same. Sorry. You're in till you die. You might start praying about dying. You're in. You're in. It doesn't matter how you feel. What matters is, I made a vow. I gave my word. And I have to take it seriously. Now, this appears to be what Jesus has in mind. Again, if you look at verse 33. You've heard that it was said to those of old, you shall not swear falsely. You shall perform to the Lord what you have sworn, or what you have vowed, what you have pledged. Just do it. Do it faithfully. And so Jesus is basically saying here, this is what you've heard. There's nothing wrong with it. You need to be those kinds of people. You have to do that, you know, all of the time, because that is the way of righteousness. The thing is, Jesus doesn't leave it there. Okay, he's going to build on that at this point. And that's what he does in verses 34 to 36. And so, unless there's a question about what I've brought up so far, then let's look at these instructions, okay? The instructions of Jesus in verses 34 to 36. Having established the fact that vows should be paid, the Lord then instructs his audience to not swear at all. Therefore, Christians are not to swear or make vows or take oaths. All right? Rightly understood. Just let that alone for just a moment. The Lord then elaborates on this by referring to things that were familiar to the Jews of that day, by which they confirmed their words to one another. In other words, it went beyond just giving your word. Your word didn't mean a whole lot unless your word was attached to something else. And so you swore by something when you were really binding yourself. If you didn't do that, maybe you didn't have to keep it. But if you swore by something else, now you're really locking yourself in. Jesus says, don't swear or vow or take an oath. You don't need to do that. Not by heaven. I swear by heaven that I will, you know, give you so much for your donkey in 6 months, you know, back in that time period. And the guy, well, he swore by heaven. I mean, I've got him now. If he doesn't come through, surely lightning will strike him down because he swore by heaven. And Jesus is saying, don't do that. You don't need to swear by heaven because heaven is God's throne. And you don't need to swear by earth, for earth is God's footstool, verse 35. And you don't need to swear by the holy city, Jerusalem, because that's the city of the great king. And you don't need to swear by your own head or by yourself, or you can't cause or change anything. Now, why did Jesus make reference to these things when they made vows? Well, because people were doing this because it added weight to their words. It indicated a greater seriousness. It seemed to increase the sense of obligation to fulfill what had been vowed. In other words, people had gotten away from the simple commandment that we just looked at about being a person of your word, performing what you say you will do. And we got loose with that and flippant with that. And so a person said, I'm not sure I can trust that. You just gave me your word. What will you swear by? You know, we talk about things we swear by. Well, they swore by these holy things, heaven, earth, Jerusalem, myself, my mother's, I swore on my mother's, grave or whatever people. I swear by something where you will really be convinced that I will do what I say I'm going to do because I really want you to give me the thing that I want. It would be similar to someone adding the words, I promise. I remember somebody some time ago who was told us they were going to do something, and we counted upon them doing it. It was something very important. It impacted the life of the church, and we just, because they had said they would do it, and they had done it before, and they had the ability to do it, we just thought it's going to be done. And it came to the day where it needed to, what was promised needed to be produced, and I didn't do it. What? We're counting on you. What do you mean? You didn't do it. And we kind of like, we were, upset with that, distraught with that, because everybody was counting on it. And the person replied with, I never promised. You see what I'm saying? That changes everything. I didn't get that part. I just thought because you said you would do it, and we asked you several times along the way, and you kept affirming that you would, that was sufficient. But this person backed away from that, but I never promised. Meaning, you really shouldn't have taken me seriously, because I didn't promise. That's what I'm saying there. See, you got to do something in people's minds where they are saying, because I did that, now I'm binding myself. My word doesn't bind me, but my promise does. Or swearing by God Almighty in heaven, I mean, now you got me. But if I don't go that far, all bets are off. You can't really count upon me. Well, see, that's what's going on here. People got into that kind of thing. Well, no, I don't have to pay you. I didn't swear by heaven. Sorry, you can't hold me to it. So they would add something to signify that they really meant it. Now, the problem that the words of Jesus raise is quite obvious. Since the Old Testament seemed to allow the taking of vows, what is the Lord actually talking about when he says that his disciples are not to do that, or not to swear in the same kind of way that he was referring to? Actually, he was taking a stand against the typical Jewish mindset of his day, and not against vowing per se. As we've already said, the teaching tradition of that time began to shift the people's attention away from the importance of the vow itself and their need to keep it to the formula that was used in the making of the vow. That's what Jesus is steering people away from. The need to establish your word by associating it with something else, by some kind of formula, which would signify that now your word meant something. Without that, the word didn't mean anything. Jesus is showing us that every part of the formula was actually a reference to Almighty God in one way or the other. Right? Whether it's heaven, earth, Jerusalem, yourself, doesn't matter what you swear by. Ultimately, you're swearing by God. And so every vow always relates to God. in one way or another. And so no vow is trivial, and so every vow must be taken seriously. You don't have to attach it to anything, because everything is related to God, as is your own word. The conclusion then is quite simple, and yet would have been astounding to the Lord's audience at that time. We can say that Jesus was stressing that the wording of the formula for a vow is irrelevant. Absolutely irrelevant. In actuality, any formula itself for a vow is completely irrelevant. Unnecessary. A formula of some type does not make a vow more real. A formula of any type does not make a vow more serious. A formula of any type is not necessary when making a vow. So you can just dispense with the whole formula kind of thing, or the I promise, or, you know, in dealing with other people in an ideal situation, we should never even have to sign a contract. You just gave your word. I'm going to pay you back. In a year, 5 years, 20 years, 30, it doesn't matter what that should be sufficient. Now, I'm not saying, you know, we're going to resort to that in the society in which we live, but see, that's the issue. You don't have to sign. You don't have to, you know, promise this and swear by that and, you know, invoke deities and all these other kinds of things. All you have to do is say it, because we are supposed to perform honorably and quickly all that we have said. And so saying it should settle the matter. And so Jesus says, people in my kingdom don't need to function according to these formulas. Dispense with that. Just be a person of integrity. Be a person of your word. And that's the bottom line here as we go on. The essential point is that we are to keep our word that we give to others. Your word, you don't have to say anything more. You don't have to swear. You don't have to promise. Your word is a vow. That's simple. And the Bible says, keep your vows. We are to be people of our word. We are to say what we mean. We are to mean what we say. We are to always tell the truth. Therefore, in light of this, a vow is really not necessary at all. And that's the significance of our Lord's remarks in verse 34a. I'd say to you, do not take an oath at all. It doesn't mean that it's wrong to make a vow. He's simply saying you don't have to swear by something to hold to your word. Your word binds you. Your word ought to bind your conscience, and you would never get away from that until your vow has been fulfilled. Then there's a release in the conscience. I have discharged my duty. I have fulfilled what I said I would do, simply because I said I would do it. In other words, be a person of integrity with your word. Keep your speech honest and pure. Other people ought to be able to count upon our word simply because we give it. Is that how other people know you? They know that when you tell them something, it's as if you had sworn by the universe itself. You don't need to do that. But do they know this is a person of their word? I can count upon it. Therefore, though, these are the qualifiers. Don't speak so hastily that you make commitments that you just cannot fulfill. I think many Christians do this, and they do it too often. We might have good intentions. We might have the desire to help. We might feel a sense of Christian duty or obligation. And so we just kind of spit out, you know, okay, I'll do it. I never really thought about, are you really able to do that? And then when it comes time, like the example I gave, when it comes time to fulfilling what you said with other people counting upon what you had told them, you're not there. And you failed them. You let them down. There's consequences to that. You know, people's lives are impacted by that. It makes things difficult on other people. So don't speak so hastily. And that's back to the Ecclesiastes passage. Don't speak so hastily that you say you will do things that you didn't think through soberly enough to know whether or not you could really pull it off. Another one, don't say to others what you think they want to hear. They're expecting me to help. I better say I will. Don't say what don't tell others what you think they want to hear or what they will like. Because when you're saying something here, you're making a vow. You don't want to make a vow for the sake of, this is kind of what they want to hear. And this will get me out of the room and, you know, I won't have to worry about it for a few days. And then you kind of forget you didn't take it very seriously under those circumstances. But your word was spoken. That was written down in the ledger in heaven. There's an accountability with respect to that here on earth and before God Himself. You have given your word. You've pledged yourself. You've committed yourself. You've taken a vow. And you can't later on say, oh, well, I wasn't serious at that moment. I didn't know I really had to do that. Well, you said you would. Yeah, but I didn't promise. See, you can't do that. And brethren, I'm talking to Christians here. We are just as guilty of this kind of thing as people in the world. Here's another one. Don't exaggerate your speech for effect. People like to do this, you know, because they want to, we like to build a story, you know. So we always use, there's nothing wrong with using legitimate hyperbole. You talk about, boy, in a million years, I would never, I mean, that's, you don't have a million years to deal with. But I mean, that's hyperbole. We understand that. But we can also exaggerate speech because we know it'll have a better impact. There was only two things, really, but I mentioned seven things because that's going to really impress them much more. You see, we do that for the kind of effect it will have with the other person. You know what? That's a form of manipulation. If you can't carry the conscience with the mere facts, or with the truth, then leave it alone. But you might wonder whether or not you can, so you embellish it and you exaggerate it because you want to get a certain reaction, you want to get a certain effect, you want somebody to act in a certain way. But see, that's the misuse of speech. That is not functioning with integrity in speech. And don't fail to fulfill your word when you give it. You give your word, you better take it seriously. You go home and put that thing in your calendar. You begin to readjust your life so that you can fulfill your vow. You can honor your commitment because people are counting upon you. And the people counting upon you have other people counting upon them. And it's all interconnected. And it unravels when one person fails to keep their word. Don't fail to fulfill your word when you give it. Keep all of your commitments. Our God and our Savior will never break His word, and we must seek to be like Him. Imagine Jesus not keeping His word. Well, you're a follower of Jesus. You've got to be as serious about your word as he is about his. I'll stop at that point for just a moment and see if there's anything that we need to discuss here together on what we've looked at so far. Mm-hmm.
It's important that your word binds you. You know, it's not something that people actually think about nowadays. Your word means very little in this day and age, you know, especially with non-Christians, but it's also in the church. And, you know, that's what grieves me the most. In days of old, you gave your word in a handshake, and that was good enough. I mean, people would know that you were a person of your word. You didn't have to have contracts or swear by anything or whatever, you know, unless you were some sort of crook or something. You know, your word meant something. I still remember that, even
sure.
Growing up in my neighborhood and with the people in my church and my father with a handshake, you know, telling somebody something. And, you know, being brought up in a Christian family, my father really stressed that to us kids. You know, you be people of your word, and you think of others. You don't be selfish. You don't be self-centered. You be other-centered,
mm-hmm.
because people are counting on you. And it's just the golden rule to think of others.
Sure.
You know, that how would you want to be treated? That's how you treat others. And if you think that you would be disappointed if you had a bunch of people that you had invited over and everybody made an excuse and nobody showed or one person showed, you know, everybody made an excuse the last moment, yeah, that'd be very disappointing to you. So you shouldn't do that to others. But, you know, in the church, people, at least 50% of the time, people don't keep their word. I mean, it's been heartbreaking, really been heartbreaking. I just want that to go on the record. Maybe somebody will hear that and keep their word next time they tell me something. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So offered in political science classes, any chance?
Should be.
There are very few people today that I'll accept a handshake from as a binding agreement. You know, I grew up like your wife, you know. You shook a man's hand and that was,
sure.
You took him at his word. But today, it doesn't work that way. And the other thing is, I find it funny when I'm talking to people and they say, can I be honest with you?
Yeah.
No, please keep lying out of it.
Yeah, like, let me be really honest now. Oh, like you haven't been up to this point? I mean, no, I understand what we mean by that, but it is funny we have to talk like that. I mean, we're conditioned by the society in which we live. Well, the point of all of this on page 110, I want you to see clearly the point Jesus is making here, and then we will draw specific application. On the one hand, any and every vow that is made must always be kept in its totality. On the other hand, there is actually no necessity to make a vow with some accompanying formula. So, Jesus brings it all together very simply in a summary type statement, and that's verse 37. So, with everything he said, he brings it down to, let what you say be simply yes, no. Remember the few words? Anything more than this comes from evil. In other words, talk less, mean what you say, do what you say. If it's yes, it's yes. If it's no, it's no. You don't need to, you know, play with it. And wouldn't it be nice if politicians follow this kind of principle here? You can't even get a yes or no. And if you can, it doesn't, the yes means something other than yes. You know, why do you want the, because that's too committed. No, I can't commit that way, man. So we got to keep it in the realm of mystery. And, but you know, you don't want to be like that in your dealings with people. You don't want to be vague, and you want to just be a straight shooter. Yes, this is the truth. No, that is not the way it was. And yes, I'm going to do this. No, I cannot do that. And you function according to your words. He brings it right down to, and you see what he's contrasting here. All the formula, all the hype, and all the, and he just says, you know, it's all crazy. In my kingdom, we function by a different kind of principle. We're people who have integrity with their speech. We mean what we say. We say what we mean. It's just that simple. So what is the Lord's essential point? Very simply this, that your word is your vow. You don't actually have to make a formal vow. You don't actually have to make a solemn oath. You don't actually have to use some fancy formula. Therefore, the word that you give to God or to another person is literally your vow. I'll get to that a little more in the application. The point that Jesus desires to make, as we've already said, is that we should simply be people of our word. We should say what we mean. We should mean what we say. We should always keep our word. And other people ought to be able to take us at our word. They should be able to count upon us. In the same way that we can count upon God. You don't even think about God not keeping his word. No, that's just never... You might have a hard time believing the things that he says. They're so, you know, astounding. But you don't have any doubt whether or not he means what he says. But that's some other problem. You know he means what he says. You know, that can work both ways. He means what he says. He's a person of his word. And he wants his family to function in the same way. He wants the members of his kingdom to function in the same way, to be people like him that can be counted upon. In other words, if you speak your word to another person, or if you affirm something with someone else, or if you agree to do something in relation to another person, or if you commit yourself to anything at all, regardless of how insignificant it may seem to you, then you have pledged and promised yourself because of your word. Literally, you have made a solemn vow, and the Lord expects you to fully honor it. I can't tell you the number of people over the years as a pastor who have talked to me and said, yes, I don't know how it works this way. They, you know, think about it, they pray about it, and they finally come and talk to me and say, you know, God's really put it on my heart that I want to do Sunday school. I want to take my turn at teaching the young children or something like that. And I, oh, great, you know, wonderful. And, you know, talk to so-and-so and let's get this thing running. And I can't tell you the number of times that's the last time I ever saw the person. Or they don't go talk to the Sunday school superintendent or whoever. Or when it actually comes to putting what they said into practice, they renege on it. See, that's the whole thing here. You've committed yourself. You've pledged yourself. You gave your word. And we'll talk about providential hindrance in a moment. But apart from that, you need to honor it. You've made a vow. We have to allow, again, for providential hindrance, of course. What do I mean by providential hindrance? Tell me what I mean.
Something outside your control.
Okay, something out of your control. God intervenes in a way that you didn't expect. We have to allow for providential hindrance. You promise that you will help me, you know, move my refrigerator tonight, and I'm counting on you, and I got the truck, I got the dolly, and I'm all set to go. And you had every good intention, but you have 104-degree fever. And I can't say, oh, man, doesn't keep his word. No. That's a providential hindrance. Something came into your life that you did not anticipate that hindered you from doing what you said you would do, planned to do, had every intention of doing. But now, because of that hindrance, you're unable to do it. But here's the thing. We have to be careful that we don't make excuses for ourselves or try to cover our failure under the pretense of being providentially hindered. I'll say more about that in the application as well. It's amazing what becomes providential hindrance when people don't want to keep their word. This would be a sorely grievous sin before the Lord. So again, as Jesus said, let what you say be simply yes or no. And now I quote James 5. Notice how the Bible's, all the writers say the same thing if they address it. Therefore, as Jesus said, here's James, but above all, my brothers, do not swear either by heaven or by earth or by any other oath, but let your yes be yes and your no be no, so that you may not fall under condemnation. In other words, if you do more than that or fail to fulfill it, you are guilty. You will come under condemnation. You'll come under judgment. That's a sin. It has to be dealt with as sin. And of course, as a Christian, we know how to deal with that. But he says, don't put yourself into that kind of situation, because you will incur guilt. You'll have to deal with it. It took the death of Jesus to atone for that sin, that you might be forgiven of it. Because without that, that sin would condemn you in the lake of fire forever. It's that serious. Conclusion. Let me work through the conclusion here. Follow with me. Think about it, and then we'll discuss it. I trust that you can recognize some of the important personal implications of this truth in our daily Christian lives. Our word given is considered by God to be our vow. It is our pledge. It is our promise. It's not necessary to make a solemn promise. Our word is our promise. It's our commitment. And keeping our word is a sign of our integrity. Therefore, God expects it to be honored, just as He always honors His word. Moreover, apart from divine providence, it should not ever be broken. Ever. Although there is nothing that can hinder God from keeping His word, there are many things that can hinder us finite and frail and feeble creatures. Is that not true? For example, I can give you my word that I will meet you at 10 o'clock sharp. I get ready for our appointment. I plan wisely. I leave with plenty of time to spare. And then I have a flat tire along the way. I still want to keep my word, and so I do everything in my power to resolve my unforeseen predicament. But I arrive an hour late, no longer finding you there. You waited as long as you could, but you finally had to leave. Regrettably, I let you down. I didn't keep my word. Now, in that case, there's providential hindrance. But still, you know, I let you down. And unless providentially hindered, we never want to do that. We must be people of our word. Now, let me put this all into proper perspective. On the one hand, let's say that you decide to make a vow before God. And again, it doesn't have to be, you know, this big formal, you know, and I vow and write it on the, you know. You commit to doing something before God. And in this case, for the sake of illustration, let's say that you commit to meeting with God every morning at 6:30 for a half hour of personal devotions. Because you just know if I don't do it then, it never gets done. And if I do get to it, I squeeze it in a 10-minute thing here and there. And I got to change my habits. I got to get more serious about this. And so, Lord, I'm making a commitment to you. I'm going to get up at 6:30. I'm going to spend a half an hour. And I know you'll be there. you can count on me being there from this time forward. Now, I would hope that you would understand that that is very serious business with God. You can't say, oh, and by the way, Lord, you got to wake me up at 6:30, or, you know. No, you're making a commitment. You just gave your word to God Himself. If giving your word to somebody else is important and must be performed, how much more so with respect to God? It's serious business. It should not be taken lightly. It should be honored apart from God's overriding providence. And I add here, oversleeping is not providential hindrance. Yeah, but the Lord knows that movie was great. I didn't get to bed till 2. And then He didn't wake me up. I was providentially hindered. No. That's not the truth. Most of us would even hesitate to make such a vow because we do understand the serious nature of the commitment and we are extremely aware of our inability to be as faithful as we know we should be. But that also gets us real sloppy as Christians because we don't swear to our own hurt, as the psalmist says. We don't make a vow. We don't mortify the deeds of the body that would prevent us from keeping my word. You know, we're very soft on ourselves. We're very flabby as Christians. We're not well exercised. Our muscles are not finely tuned. And so we end up, as I say oftentimes, we end up becoming addicted to mediocrity because we refuse to really discipline ourselves and exercise ourselves unto godliness, as the Bible tells us to do. You cannot grow much as a Christian if it doesn't cost you something. And it doesn't just happen. If I hang out long enough, I'm sure I'm... No, you're going to have to put some effort into it. You've got to sow seeds, you have to cultivate, you have to water, you have to weed. You have to do a lot of things to get the kind of spiritual harvest that you really desire. Left to itself, it's going to go the other direction. You've got to work it. You've got to exercise it. On the other hand, let's say that you decided to meet someone for an appointment at 8:30 in order to discuss your involvement in the church. What the Lord is telling us is that you have made a vow because you have given your word, and that vow with respect to that person ought to be taken as seriously as the commitment you made to God about your devotions. That's the point I'm trying to make here. We'd be reluctant to tell God the kind of thing I just suggested because I'm not sure I can keep it. And yet when it comes to people, we kind of just rattle at the mouth and don't realize that is just as serious as the other. They're both vows. They're both vows made in the presence of God. They're both vows made with respect to God. And both of them need to be honored. You need to be a person of your word. Again, apart from God's overriding providence, and I do mean His overriding providence and not our lame excuses, the pledge we've made to another person must be honored. In other words, we must not take our word to God seriously and then our word to other people lightly. Christians must be people of their word in everything and in all circumstances all the time. And brethren, may I say, not just in the big things like our wedding vows, but also in the little things with other people. Wedding vow, or, honey, I'll take out the trash when I get home tonight. 2 vows. Both of them are to be honored. Both of them are to be fulfilled. One you can do in a moment in time when you get home. The other one, you will work out the vow for a lifetime. So there's various kinds of vows. They impact our life differently. But one of those isn't like really serious. And the other one is kind of like, well, I mean, it's just the trash. Who cares? It's not a big deal. Your word has to be a big deal. Because if you can't be trusted about the trash, you also can't be trusted about other things. If you're not faithful in the little things, Jesus says, I won't even give you bigger things to deal with. So we say, well, I would be a man of integrity if we were talking about large sums of money, but I mean, it was just a dollar. You can't be faithful with a dollar? How do we know you can be faithful with a million of them? See, it's a matter of principle. The amount is irrelevant. It's a matter of principle. It's a matter of integrity. It's a matter of your word. That's why when you hear about, you know, the I think of the people in Washington again, but they're not the only culprits. But when they are playing around with other people's money and lying and cheating and doing this and doing that, can you imagine what they do in the little things? I mean, it's just incredible. I mean, there's just no integrity in a person like that. The true problem surfaces at this point, as far as I am concerned. We live in a society that no longer places any importance on our word given. Even in the big things like wedding vows. Isn't that true? We can stand in the presence of God before a Christian minister and in front of a group of witnesses and pledge that we will honor our marriage commitment until death separates us and then break our vow at the drop of a hat. That being the case, then what hope is there for honoring lesser commitments? Right? I mean, isn't that not true? If you can break that vow, you can sure, you know, break the vow you make to pay somebody back about something. And if you can do that, you can sure break your word in relation to just relational things with other people and commitments that you make. The real reason for such an attitude is that we have completely lost the true meaning of the word commitment. That's like the word discipline in our day. Like, I don't want to hear that. That impinges on my do my own thing and my freedom and my feelings and my desires. And I just want to be free. I don't want to be pinned down. And so we have, you know, jettisoned these words that have anything to do with binding our conscience, commitment, integrity, and, giving our word, though, is making a commitment. Therefore, by our word, we make promises, we make commitments, we pledge ourselves. But you know what? In our day, it's always on our terms. Oh, I gave my word, but, I mean, you have to understand, it was as long as I felt like that. It was as long as circumstances were conducive to me doing that. But when that changed, then I don't have to keep my word anymore. Yeah, I gave my word to the woman, but she's changed along the way. And so I'm out from under the obligation to fulfill my vow. But when you made the vow, there were no conditions attached to it. Were there? How many conditions are there in the marriage exchange of vows? There's not any. You're pledging ahead of time. It doesn't matter how sick we may become. It doesn't matter how old we may get. It doesn't matter how poor we may become. It doesn't matter how difficult life may be. I'm pledging I will be there for you until the day that death takes one of us off the scene. I'm telling you in advance, before it comes, so that when it does, you can count upon me. Problem is, when those things come, is when we jump ship. because our word means nothing. It's on our terms. Then when the conditions change or our feelings subside or our good intentions waver, we conveniently change our mind. The problem is God remembers the word spoken and holds us accountable. Brethren, we must take what we say much more seriously than we do, and the reason is because God does. Josephus wrote of the Essenes, "They are eminent for fidelity and are the ministers of peace. Whatever they say is firmer than an oath. But swearing is avoided by them, and they esteem it worse than perjury, for they say that he who cannot be believed without swearing by God is already condemned." How much more should that kind of thing be able to be said of Christian kingdom members? Imagine what the day of judgment will reveal about all the vows that we have casually broken, making us nothing better than liars. May God be pleased to enlighten us now so that we can repent and amend our ways. I think a lot of us would have a lot of repenting to do. Maybe not. Maybe you can't remember some specifics, but you know, I have to say over the years, I really a lot of times have not been faithful to my word. I've not kept it. And people can't always count on me. You need to own that, and you need to ask God to help you, give you the grace to deal with that, so you can become a person of integrity. We have a few minutes left here if you would like to discuss any of this that we've addressed here tonight. Don't you think important subject in the day in which we live, in our society? Yes, I think it sure is. I know I have a lot of people I think I could send this tape to. Go ahead.
Are so flaky. It really, really bothers me. But one verse that comes to me is, the Lord will say to us one day, as he said in Matthew 25:21, he says, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over little. I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of your master." It's the little things that count in life. You know, like you said, if you can't trust someone in the little things, then what makes you think they're going to be trustworthy in big things? And it's the little things that count. And people are not only self-centered, but they go on how they feel. I don't feel like doing this. I don't feel like going tonight. I feel tired. You know, I don't feel so good. You know, my dad used to say, "I don't care how you feel, you do it." Maybe it was the German family I grew up in, very disciplined. But it doesn't matter how you feel, you do it. I don't care if you're tired or whatever. Unless we were in bed with 103 fever, you know, we had to do certain things at home. And I think that's lacking. I don't know where along the lines people started teaching their kids that doesn't matter anymore, that they, you know, had to do something. I don't know where that went wrong. But I see that people do things what they can get out of it. And if they don't get out of it what they thought they were going to, or it inconveniences them for some reason, they don't do it, or they get out of whatever vow they made or promise they made or word they said to you. And it's not about that, you know. Mm-hmm. It's not about feelings or getting for yourself. It's doing it for the kingdom of God, for the glory of God, and for others. You know, you have to put yourself out of the way.
Mm-hmm. See, we have to bind our conscience. The word that we give has to bind our conscience. For now, my conscience will compel me to do what I have said. But, you know, if I say in such a way that my own conscience isn't even bound by it, then I'll never ultimately be faithful to my word. I have to bind my conscience. I have to make a commitment. And that has to be, I mean, unless I'm dead, I'm going to do it. I don't know. I think you have to start when they're real, real young, you know, and train them. And we taught our kids that, I mean, you know, especially in the spiritual realm, but also in it just, you do things because they're right to do.
I remember,
you don't ask yourself how you happen to feel. I don't feel like making my bed. I didn't ask you how you felt about it. That's irrelevant. Mm-hmm. It's the right thing to do. And in this house, we do it.
Mm-hmm. I remember you.
Not in a, you know, a difficult kind of, but I mean, you get the principle down. The kids left and learn the principles.
I remember you taught our girls to make their beds when they're about 3 years old. And I said, they're too young. And you said, no, you make your bed. And then he told me, Doris, you better not touch it. You better not straighten it up for them. They better learn how to make their bed. You know, but it's...
They forget, Doris, you're running in there. they did a great... No.
But it is. It's
I want
important.
Them to learn.
Yeah, it's important to teach them when they're really, really young. And we also taught them, you never do your homework or your assignments or your schoolwork on Sundays. And they never did, all the way through school or through college, and they got very, very good grades. And, you know, we were always very proud of that. God honored that. That God honored that. And if you do it God's way, He will bless you and He will honor you.
Yes, Ken.
There's a social institution where we practice this loss of integrity, and we make jokes out of it, and we accept it, we tolerate it. It's called a New Year's resolution. You know, we make a vow to ourselves and we accept it. So if we accept our own vow, obviously God will accept it. Obviously everybody else will accept it.
Yeah, that's a way of dumbing down the whole principle that Indiana.
With people today, what happens is that the mind does think something and the body does something else, and sometimes we don't listen to the mind, and we listen to our body, and we just get lazy. And we say, oh, I'm not going to do it. I don't feel like it. But that's like the laziness in us. And it does have to be taught when you're young, because then you're always going to be putting it off, putting things off, listening to the wrong thing. Instead of listening to your mind and your heart, you're listening to your lazy body. And I think that's what happens to most of us when we just say, oh, I'll do it tomorrow, I'll do this tomorrow, I'm not going to go to church today, I don't feel like it. I think it's just we're lazy, you know, I think we're just lazy. And when we grew up long time, when I grew up, there's no such thing as being lazy. You just have to do it. You just have to do it, you know.
Yeah, I think that's, so there's, let's see, I'm committed to doing this, and I gave my word, I and this is really what is the right thing to do, but at this particular time I don't feel like doing that. See, what I was always afraid of, if I gave into that feeling once, it'd be real easy to the next time. Pretty soon I'll be looking for reasons to feel that way at that particular time. And so I would not allow myself or my family, especially in church things, to ever be that, you called it lazy, I won't call it lazy, but to be that non-committal, because the commitment had to override feelings. I mean, how many times, I mean, think about it, come on. An athlete who is training for the Olympics that will be coming up in a few years, you know, has to, if he has the goal in mind and he's serious, he or she is serious, they have to make commitments to their everything about their life. The thing is, what they're after is so important to them that they will keep those commitments. And they will be afraid of reneging on those commitments because they know that bad habits can come. And I'm going to lose ground, and maybe I'll lose sufficient ground. I won't get back and get caught up and be ready to, I've got to stay on the cutting edge because it's so important to me. Well, as I read the Apostle Paul, like in 1 Corinthians 9, where he says, I buffet my body. Actually, what he's saying, that I beat my body black and blue to keep it under control so that I will never give in to those kinds of whims, so that I will have the energy of the Spirit to do what God would have me do, which would be the right thing. We have to take ourselves in task like that and deal with ourselves accordingly, or else we will, you know, again, we will get addicted to mediocrity. But, you know, the problem is people don't really believe that this actually makes any difference. Because we just say, I'm saved by grace, I'm going to heaven. What's the big issue? What's the big deal? But you cannot get that from reading your Bible. It talks about excellence. It talks about reward. It talks about the, you know, all kinds of things to give us the incentive to aim for something better, believing that in eternity it's going to make a difference. You got one shot at it here. And when you close your eyes in death, it's done. Whatever it is, that's going to go with you for eternity. You better seize the moment now, because this is all you've got. That's the picture that the Bible gives. We've got to take it that seriously. Jane?
Yeah, we often talk about how do we witness to other people, and that seems like such an easy, simple, right way of doing it. If we, are ambassadors for Christ, if we want to draw closer to the character of Christ, this is a definite way of doing it. Let our yes be yes and our no be no. I'm thinking fairly recently on a Tuesday night, a neighbor knocked on the door and came in and was crying, and I need a mother, and you know, she kind of fell apart, and we sat down and we talked for a little bit, and I knew it was Tuesday night that I had to go to Bible study, so I made sure she was all right, and then we made an agreement that I would go over to her house the next day, you know, in the morning, 10 o'clock or something like that. The funny thing was that I set my alarm, and I really we did, you know, some praying, thoughtful about what her problem was, and went over at the time appointed and knocked on the door, and she was surprised. Oh, well, I didn't think you'd come. You know, so that's on the other end, you know. I mean, that's what the world expects of people, is not necessarily to keep their promise or to come. And so that's just another thought. But I do think that as ambassadors, this is one, I mean, nothing is small, but it seems like we've treated it as small, right. But it's pretty big.
Yeah, good. Well, we can control that unruly member. We can bridle the whole thing, you know, but you have one more thing, Darsh, and then we'll...